Hi, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Dakota Digest, brought to you by South Dakota Public Broadcasting. I'm Nate Weck, and thanks for joining me. Here's the top news for the week ending February 26, 2016. Lawmakers are endorsing a sales tax increase for teacher pay. House Bill 1182 adds one half penny to the state's sales tax to generate money for education and property tax relief. As SDPB's Keely Boltina reports, the measure failed by one vote last week. On Monday, it succeeded by the same margin.
Hours of debate have echoed in South Dakota's House of Representatives chamber regarding House Bill 1182, and the discussion before its latest vote was no exception. Lawmakers clashed over points of contention, including whether the state can find money for higher teacher pay within the current budget. State Representative Tom Brunner says increasing the sales tax doesn't fix South Dakota's education funding problems.
I don't think we have a revenue problem at all. I think we have a priority problem. And if we don't change these priorities, if we adopt this, we raise taxes, we raise revenue, high tide floats all ships in 5 years. If we keep doing what we've been doing, we'll be right back here. Unless we change the culture and the priorities within state government to continue to raise and raise at the same rate the revenue comes in 5 years, I hope you all save your button with the 51 and the line through it, because you'll still be in the same spot. And then we going to raise it another half cent, or what are we going to do? Because I think we're going to be in the same position.
Brunner says a sales tax is the easy way. State Representative Ray Ring says what's easy is speaking vaguely about funding education instead of citing specific areas where lawmakers should take millions of dollars from other state departments.
If you know that our priorities are wrong, if you know that we're not using the existing funds appropriately, don't tell me we need to reset our priorities. Tell me where to reset them. Okay? If you know that there's inefficient in government, tell me what to cut.
Ring serves on the Appropriations Committee. State Representative Jacqueline Sly co-chaired a task force on education funding.
I heard over and over again, we have a broken system, we have a broken system, we have a broken system. Ladies and gentlemen, the work of the Blue Ribbon Task Force was about that broken system. We spent weeks, months addressing our broken system. That's why you have the plan before you. It is true, there's extra money in reserves. The plan addresses that. We have challenges with funding and making sure that our schools have enough funds so they can pay their teachers, so we have teachers for our students. The plan addresses that.
47 state representatives voted to support House Bill 1182. That's just enough to meet the two-thirds majority necessary to increase the sales tax. Three state representatives switched their votes from last week. One Democrat changed his yes vote to a no, and two Republicans switched from voting against the measure to supporting House Bill 1182.
State senators passed a measure that bans abortions after 22 weeks. The bill supporters say it's because of the unborn baby's ability to feel pain. Much of the testimony included emotional, personal stories. SDPB's Jennifer Jones has more.
State Senator Jenna Hager says the people of South Dakota have a desire to protect the lives of unborn children when they're shown by medical evidence to be capable of experiencing pain.
Children of this gestational age, they have all bodily organs and they function intact. They're often able to survive outside the womb with proper medical care. So when unborn babies feel pain, we must protect them, keep them safe, and we cannot rationalize harming them, let alone ending their life.
Opponents of Senate Bill 72 say it's not the state's place to make family decisions. Senator Deb Peters shared the story of complications with her first pregnancy and difficult decisions she and her husband had to make. She says this bill would not have made her life easier.
I will tell you that we have no business passing pieces of legislation like this that gets in the way of family decision and the family decision between the mother and the family and the doctor. This is personal, folks. This, yes, we are trying to protect that unborn child, but I will tell you that families in this state are also trying to protect that unborn child. This bill has no business being here today.
Senators passed the bill with a vote of 21 to 14. It now heads to a House committee for further debate.
Each legislative session, some major issues seem to take the spotlight in peer, and education is dominating this year's conversation. Much of SDPB's coverage relates to funding schools and teachers because lawmakers are trying to find ways to fairly and adequately fund education. A visit to one Sioux Falls school reveals some of those differences. SDPB's Keely Boltina reports.
George McGovern Middle School is on the northwest edge of Sioux Falls. Fields surround a two-story brick building with a curved front entrance, peppered with windows. The facade appears as a typical example of public education in the area. But McGovern is different from most South Dakota schools. White students are in the minority. They make up 47%. Hispanic, Black, and Native American students make up the majority. Inside a classroom on the first floor, students of varied backgrounds start Tuesday working on Greek mythology.
It is an open area. Anyone else have more to it than that? It's an open area, the Agora. Open area. Miss Sam, what did you find?
The space had two functions. It was both a market and a place where people could meet and debate issues.
Excellent. So that's our definition of an Agora. An Agora is a market.
In this room, 23 kids learn about Greek culture. Six bright orange chairs reflect the fluorescent lighting. The seats are empty. One-fifth of students on this roster aren't in school this morning. Principal Lavana Emanuel says some kids lack reliable ways to get to class.
Sometimes the biggest problem that we have is having a full house. So we have attendance issues.
Emanuel says instability at home makes showing up at school every day and on time tough. About 750 regular students are enrolled at McGovern, and one-fifth of kids are highly mobile. Emanuel says that uncertainty causes physical stress and mental struggles.
We see students that maybe they're not quite sure where they're going to go, or maybe they've come from out of state and they are living with somebody they don't know very well. Maybe some of the brothers and sisters have been left behind. Sometimes they've lost things like pets or prized possessions. They just feel a real sense of loss.
Emanuel says McGovern Middle School accesses support services and professionals to help students cope with volatile circumstances outside of school beyond their control. She says educators pay specific attention to students' mental health, but they also try to meet growing physical needs. At this school, more than three-quarters of kids qualify for free and reduced lunches. Even then, some of them don't have enough to eat.
We can always help a child who's hungry. The biggest obstacle is for us to know that. And so a lot of times we will ask that question. Our lunch program and the folks that are behind the scenes, they are incredible. If we run out of things here to tide a student over until lunch, we can go visit with them and go, you know, directly to them, and they'll get us some, you know, breakfast bars or some milk to get a student to lunch.
Principal Lavana Emanuel says her students experience problems that stem from poverty. She sees some of these issues in an immersion program McGovern hosts to support students brand new to the United States. Federal funding covers most of the education costs for those students for 2 years. Then state dollars help to bridge the gap with specific money for English language learners. Emanuel says children in the program are sometimes the only English-speaking members of their families. They're striving to function in a world where the food is strange, people dress differently, and their experiences in refugee camps or war-torn nations offer stark contrast to a public school on the prairie.
We sometimes have students come to us that have never held a pencil. They have no idea what a bell schedule is like. They come from places where capital punishment is practiced. It's a common practice. And, you know, it takes them a long time really to acclimate to America and to Sioux Falls. They've never seen snow.
About 75 students tried to adjust to a new reality in the immersion center. Emanuel says the personal hardships they endure are usually connected to their immigration. The middle school principal says she sees other devastating versions of indigence.
what we see with foreign-born poverty is it's more situational poverty, whereas American-born poverty is generational, and there are significant differences. So in a foreign-born poverty situation that's situational, that may be 10 to 12 years. They didn't always grow up in poverty, and they believe in the American dream of, you know, education is the ticket out, and they trust the school system. You just don't always see as much of the mental health issues that we see with our American-born poverty.
Emmanuel says she watches born and raised South Dakotans struggle to concentrate on math or science as their families grapple with decades of deprivation. She says these students often come to school after hearing family members argue about how to pay for food or gas. She says they confide in their teachers that they're sad or scared when parents fight. Emmanuel says middle schoolers face home lives where their primary caregivers wrestle with substance abuse or self-medicate.
Midwestern people with Midwestern values would say these parents need to be more responsible for their children, and it's the parent fault. It's the parent's fault that this child isn't educated, highly educated, or is suffering in any way. But I would say these are children. You know, let's take away who the child belongs to. You know, from the hours of 8 to 4, they're under our care. They should be receiving services from an institution that sets them up for success. And so let's take away the parent equation, you know, take away the blame game, and let's give these children the same access to opportunity that all the other children have.
In the gleaming hall of the palace, where light never failed, the Olympian gods sat on 12 golden thrones and reigned over heaven and earth.
In one classroom at George McGovern Middle School, some students sport faded sweatshirts and well-worn shoes. Others have fine school supplies and brand-name clothes. Some appear well-rested and showered. Others likely consider school a sanctuary from chaos. These kids don't look the same, but each child receives identical state funding, so state leaders provide a level of fairness. Principal Lavana Emmanuel says caring for students beyond their worksheets and test scores doesn't offer some kids extra. Emmanuel says it's about giving children who are underprivileged the same chance other people take for granted.
Governor Dennis Dugard says he's waiting for a document from the federal government before he's able to move forward with Medicaid expansion. He says the state health officer letter containing the formal decision about the policy changes is imminent. As SDPB's Jennifer Jones reports, he'll have to decide if it's too late in the session to have this discussion.
Governor Dennis Dugard says he's increasingly optimistic that federal policy changes will allow for the expansion of Medicaid without spending general funds. He says he can't go before the legislature without the state health officer letter. Once that arrives, he says he'll evaluate whether or not lawmakers are willing to study the numbers and be satisfied that expansion is doable. The House of Representatives sent the message this week that they want to see the Medicaid discussion outside the general appropriations bill. Representative Brian Gosch supports House Bill 1234, which requires legislative approval before adopting Medicaid changes.
So you could have a separate policy discussion on expansion, separate from all the things that are tied into the general bill, all the different funding aspects of state government and the departments and Medicaid providers and courts and all the things like that.
But Governor Dugard says it's important to keep the conversation inside the context of the general bill.
When you pull it out and just say, philosophically, should this be funded or not, it divorces it from the necessary balancing that you have to do against other demands, against limited revenues. You've got a fixed amount of revenue. If you want to spend more here, then you have to spend less there. So all those things, I think, are appropriately debated within the context of the general bill. And so to separate them out, I think, is procedurally wasteful.
Dugard says House Bill 1234 stacks rules on top of each other. Republican leaders say it's important to have a separate policy discussion. But all of this hinges on a green light from the feds.
A federal lawsuit alleging violations of the Indian Child Welfare Act in Pennington County is now back in motion. Judge Jeffrey Viken issued an order on March 30th last year, finding the judges, prosecutors, and child protection officials violated ICWA in the way they conducted hearings immediately after children were removed from their parents' care. For almost a year, Viken has been reviewing defendants' motions for reconsideration. SDPB's Victoria Wicks has followed this case since it was filed in federal court in early 2013.
Judge Jeff Viken sided with plaintiffs a year ago when he agreed that parents' rights were not observed at hearings held within 48 hours of removal of a child from a home. Now he has reaffirmed that order. Plaintiffs include Native parents and the Rosebud and Oglala Sioux tribes. Named as defendants in their supervisory capacities are Seventh Circuit Judge Jeff Davis, Pennington County State's Attorney Mark Vargo, Secretary of Social Services Lynn Valenti, and Pennington County Child Protection Services Supervisor Luann Van Hunnick. Viken says parents at the 48-hour hearings have not been given adequate reasons their children were taken away and didn't have a chance to argue for immediate return of the children. The next move is to establish what needs to happen. Plaintiff's lawyer, Dana Hanna, says Viken will hold a hearing in which parties can have a voice toward a solution. After that hearing, Viken will issue a ruling that instructs parties how to proceed. Hanna says he assumes that ruling will direct the court to provide indigent Indian parents with lawyers to represent them at 48-hour hearings and that the proceedings will be more meaningful.
It will require the state to put on some kind of actual witness to give testimony in the hearings to show why DSS should continue to keep custody of the children.
Hanna says the plan should outline a legal standard that has to be followed before DSS can keep custody of children.
The injunctive relief will spell out the specific requirements for a constitutional and legally adequate temporary custody hearing.
Judge Viken still has to rule on plaintiff's complaint that DSS failed to train its workers to meet equal requirements. Attorneys for defendants have declined to comment on ongoing litigation.
Governor Dennis Dugard is considering supporting a bill that allows one type of medical marijuana. Earlier in the session, he said he would not support Senate Bill 171. As SDPB's Jennifer Jones reports, the measure has since been amended to allow only one marijuana extract.
Governor Dennis Dugard says his main opposition to the original bill was the possibility that medical marijuana in the plant form could be a gateway to recreational use. Senate Bill 171 was amended to allow only cannabidiol, a marijuana extract that doesn't cause a high. The measure allows the compound in liquid, oil, or pill form to treat intractable epilepsy. Dugard says he sympathizes with people who have seizure disorders. He says his daughter Laura had a number of grand mal seizures when she was younger.
I can't tell you how Linda and I were just deathly afraid for her. I've learned since then that that is not uncommon as children reach adolescence. Many of them will outgrow that, and happily Laura did. But that it happened a number of times, and in each of those instances we were deathly afraid for her. And so if this is one more means by which those kinds of things can be avoided, I certainly want to support that.
Dugard says he still needs to learn more about cannabidiol before giving his full support. Proponents of Senate Bill 171 say cannabidiol can make a big difference for kids with seizures. Opponents say there needs to be more studies to make sure it's safe and effective before making it legal. The bill is scheduled for a House committee hearing next week.
And that's going to do it for another week of Dakota Digest. If you'd like to see more radio news or additional programming of South Dakota Public Broadcasting, visit us online at sdpb.org. Be sure to connect with us on social media as well by liking South Dakota Public Broadcasting on Facebook or by following our Twitter accounts. Our handles are at SODACPB, at SDPB News, at SDPB, and at SDPB Sports. For South Dakota Public Broadcasting, I'm Nate Weck. Have a great day, everyone.